And today, I would like to talk about intuition. And I would like to begin that with a story. I have many stories in my life that I wonder whether I should attribute to intuition or coincidence or both or none. And I wondered which story I should share. And the one that I've picked occurred several years ago now, and the reason that I remember it so vividly, it occurred on the day of the tragic Port Arthur massacre back in the mid-1990s. And it was a Sunday afternoon, and Rory and I were having coffee at a cafe on the pavement at in Melbourne Street in North Adelaide. And we'd had one coffee, and we decided, will we have another one? And 9.5 times out of 10, I always say, let's have another coffee. Always. That's always my answer. And so does Rory. And something deep within me said, no, I don't want any more coffee. I want to go home. I had nothing to go home to, no reason to go home, but I was really strongly adamant, no, that's enough. We've had enough. We'll go home. And we walked around the corner to our house in the next block, and as we walked around the corner, I could hear ambulances coming. And then Rory got in his car to go somewhere and shakily rang me from a phone box to tell me that the table that we'd been sitting at had been ploughed through by a car. Now, it probably was just coincidence. It was probably coincidence. But those sorts of things do start you thinking about the wider senses, the six senses that we may have that we don't yet understand about. So I don't know what made me remember that today, but as soon as I remembered it, I decided we were going to change the whole sermon. So that's why. Today, I'd like to speak about intuition. Intuition is a hot topic at present. A glance at bookshelves in any local bookshop will confirm this. For the cooks and dieters among you, there is the Intuitive Cooking and Eating Guide. If you are a business person or investor, there is the Intuitive Trader, probably as good a bet as any at the moment. If you are a parent, there is Increase Your Child's Intuitive Potential, and so on and so on. It seems intuition is big business. Today I would like to explore intuition, its powers, its gifts, and its perils. So, what is intuition? To understand some of what intuition is, let me ask you all some questions. Have you ever had the experience of arriving at an appointment and realising that you can't remember having shaved or combed your hair? A quick stroke of your face and a dash to the bathroom to peer in the mirror confirms that you indeed have combed your hair and shaved, but you do not consciously remember having done those things. This was your intuitive process working with you. Have you ever met a person and within minutes had a strong feeling, either positively or negatively, about them, that much later, after weeks, months or years of knowing them, has confirmed those early gut feelings? This was your intuitive process working with you. Have you ever had a flash of creativity come to you in a moment of repose or relaxation, while walking or fishing maybe, or washing the dishes, or sleeping perhaps? This flash, this idea, when applied to your chosen art or craft, or as a practical solution to an everyday challenge, proves to be a highly creative contribution to your life, and yet it seemed to come out of nowhere. This was your intuitive process working with you. Have you ever had the feeling that you've forgotten to do something, or you've misplaced something, and as hard as you try, you cannot seem to remember what it was that you've forgotten, or find what it was that you've misplaced? So you give up trying. You push it from your mind and move on to another, usually practical, physical task, and hey presto, you remember what it was that you'd forgotten, you find what it was that you'd lost. This was your intuitive process working with you. Have you ever been deliberating or even agonising over a decision? It may be as trivial as whether to buy the blue dress or the yellow dress in the shop, or it may be as important as whether or not to marry someone. Have you ever considered such a decision, weighed up all the rational pros and cons, and come to the conclusion that choice A is the right choice, the rational choice? Yet, Yet something deep within you tells you that choice B, although not having much to recommend it on paper, is the right choice for you. Have you felt this gut feeling, thrown caution to the wind, gone with it, and been forever grateful that you did? Or have you ignored this feeling, chosen the logical option, and regretted it ever since? If you have felt any of these things, they were your creative and intuitive processes working with you. I've carefully named this mysterious process just that, a process, a tendency, a continuum, if you like. I like to picture it this way, not thinking of it as a thing or a static potential, but rather as the dynamic, fluid essence that I think it is. Professor Guy Claxton, an academic in the field of psychology and education at the University of Bristol, explains that the brain works in a variety of ways, and these modes operate at different speeds. Some of our brain's functions, he says, are performed at lightning speed. Others can take seconds, minutes, hours, days, or even years to complete their course. These processes take the time that they take, and they operate toward the intuitive end of the rational intuitive continuum. Professor Claxton refers to our rational processes as our conscious mind. This mind, he says, is concerned with conscious problem solving. It is purposeful and action oriented. It may involve the impeccable rationality of the prototypical scientist, with her equations and flowcharts and technical terms. Or it may involve the more common or garden kinds of thinking, weighing up the pros and cons of a decision, talking things through with a friend, jotting down thoughts or making lists on the back of an envelope, trying out arguments over dinner, discussing family arrangements. The mode of thinking that does not operate out of the conscious mind, the undermined, as Professor Claxton calls it, is more intuitive in its approach. This form of thinking, this type of knowing, is a slow knowing, a kind of thinking that rather than demanding a rapid response, a lightning quick delivery, favours rather a mulling over, a slow simmer on the back burner. It does not respond to a demand for answers, but takes as long as it takes. Professor Claxton compares these two ways of thinking and knowing to the hare and the tortoise in Aesop's fable. We need both ways of thinking and knowing as individuals and as a society. In many situations in life, we need the quick wit, the lightning response, and the precision of the hare. Believe me, in a cardiac arrest situation in an emergency room, the slow meanderings of the tortoise have no place. Here, the hare reigns supreme, and so he should. But in other places, the speed and certainty with which the hare operates are not appropriate. In less black and white situations, in a more ambiguous climate, the slow mulling of the tortoise and the depths he plumbs as he ponders and considers may perhaps prove deeper and wiser than the rapid and sometimes superficial gleanings of the hare. Intuitive ways of thinking need time. Intuition and the fruits of intuition, namely creativity, require time. They require contemplation, a certain sort of relaxation, a pondering, a mulling, and a musing. You cannot call up the wisdom of intuition in an instant, and you cannot produce creativity on demand. Many, if not most, of the world's great thinkers throughout history, writers, artists, scientists, musicians alike, all report the slow wisdom of the intuitive process. The ideas of intuition need time to gestate. They need a long and slow incubation period. This incubation period may last for days, weeks, months, or years even. But its value is not just confined to long periods of gestation. It can also work over a shorter span, as a night even. It has often been said that the music and lyrics of the beautiful Beatles ballad Yesterday came to Paul McCartney in a dream. Allegedly, he awoke in the morning and penned the ballad in minutes. How long those melodies and lyrics were marinating in Paul McCartney's intuitive undermined, We can only speculate. What we do know is that they did not come about by any act of conscious will. The French mathematician Henri Poincaré, well known for his reflection on his own creative process, says, "Often when one works hard at a question, nothing good is accomplished at the first attack. Then one takes a rest, longer or shorter, and sits down anew to the work. During the first half hour, as before, nothing is found. And then, all of a sudden, the decisive idea presents itself to the mind. The role of this unconscious work in mathematical invention appears to me incontestable." The 1985 medical Nobel laureate Michael Brown describes how, "As we did our work, we felt at times that there was almost a hand guiding us. Because we would go from one step to the next, and somehow we would know which was the right way to go, and I really can't tell how we each knew that." I sometimes have this feeling when I'm writing my sermon for Sunday services. I start out with an idea, and then I research it. I gather my ideas from reading, from personal experiences, from films, music, the radio, talking with other people or watching the television. And then I draw up a sermon plan from these ideas, and I think my way through the sermon structure and content. Sometimes this works, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes I'm aware of something else happening. Sometimes I'm aware of an idea emergingly, seemingly out of nowhere. I go with that idea for a while, and then everything just stops. And sometimes I panic, especially if it's Thursday or later. But increasingly, I'm able to listen to a still, small voice that says, "Just wait. Go slow. More is yet to come." So I stop. I leave my desk. I leave my study. I make a pot of tea and I drink it. I pick up my knitting and I knit a few rows. I walk the dog. I vacuum the floor if I am getting especially desperate. And ever so gradually, the next idea comes to me, and then the next, and then the next, until I've got a sermon. Our intuition, if we listen to it and work with it, provides us with many gifts and many treasures, and it is indeed a marvellous tool. Yet intuition is not infallible. Dr. David Myers wisely points out the pitfalls of intuition in his book, Intuition, Its Powers and Its Perils. Intuition, he says, is not always all that it seems. My geographical intuition tells me that New York is south of Washington, D.C., that Canberra is so far east that, Jane, you're just about on the coast, that Albania is north of the Ukraine, and that Spain is due west of France. All these intuitions are patently wrong. If any of us were to drive down the street in North Carolina in the United States, our intuition would tell us to drive on one side of the road. Yet the rules and conventions of that place would demand that we move over to the other side, and very quickly. When I asked you all those questions earlier in the address, could your intuitive answers to them have been wrong? Could they have been dangerous, even? When you have a strong gut feeling about someone, is it always the inner voice of wisdom speaking to you? Or is it just an unconscious, knee-jerk reaction born out of years of conditioning to prejudices and stereotypes? Could listening to your gut about someone just be plain old judging a book by its cover? Could some of what we call the voice of intuition just be a primitive response of ill-thought-out prejudices? Would we not be wiser in these cases to energetically measure our intuition against reality and subject our creative hunches to sceptical scrutiny? Does it really matter, we might ask? Does comprehending the powers and perils of intuition matter at all? I contend that it matters greatly. The intuitions of judges and jurors determine the fate of many lives. Is she telling the truth? Am I convinced beyond reasonable doubt? Will he do it again if he's released? Investors' intuitions affect fortunes. Has the market bottomed yet? Is it time to shift into bonds? Doctors' intuitions can steer their practice. Is he at risk of suicide at the moment? Is that chest pain cardiac in origin, or is it just indigestion? Intuitions shape our fears. Do we fear things we should or should not? Intuitions form our impressions. Are our stereotypes accurate? Just because we feel something strongly, maybe at a gut level, at an intuitive level, does not always or necessarily mean that it is right. Henri Poincaré, the mathematician I quoted just earlier, said very wisely, "It is by intuition that we discover. It is by logic that we prove." The undermine, the subconscious mind, our intuition, accounts for the arrival of ideas both fit and unfit, says Professor Guy Claxton in his book, Harebrain Tortoise Mind. Reason and logic then act like the environment, putting each of these candidates to the test and ensuring that only the fittest survive. The poet Amy Lovell echoes the need for intuition and logic to work hand in hand. She says that intuition is a most temperamental ally. Often he will strike work at some critical point and not another word is to be got out of him. Here is where the conscious training of the poet comes in, for he must fill in what the subconscious has left. This is the reason a poet must be both born and made. He must be born with a subconscious factory always working for him, or he can never be a poet at all. And he must have knowledge and talent enough to putty up his holes. Intuition and logic, imagination and reason, need to work in tandem, it seems, if we are to garner the great wisdom that they both have to offer us. To work well with both kinds of thinking, we need to have patience. We need to know how to wait creatively. We need to tolerate the emptiness and quiet of waiting. We need to remember the words of the tortoise in Aesop's fable, "Slow and steady wins the race," and not settle for the impulsive, superficial lure of the hare. To live a full life, a rounded life, a life of depth and texture, a life able to hold ambiguity and uncertainty gently within one's embrace, we all need to learn the value of working both with reason and with intuition. I would like to close with some beautiful words from the Sikh scriptures. They describe beautifully how when reason has come to the end of the road, we need intuition. And when intuition has told us all it can, we turn back to reason, backwards and forwards, around and around in a circle. If you want to play the game of love, come down my street. And if you set foot on its path, come with your head held in the palm of your hand and do not be afraid of public opinion. Amen.